Hello everyone, Ian here with a warm welcome to this, the December edition of the Angus New Sound. That wee introductory jingle you've just heard was specially written for Angus Talking Newspapers away back in the 1980s, and it was lost until it surfaced recently when the son of Stan Letton, who founded the Talking Newspaper in Brecon back in 1981, found various tapes and papers and kindly passed them on to us. I am currently digitising some of the tapes, and that's where I found this jingle, and we may in future include some articles which give a flavour of the past in Angus. Back to the present. Your readers this month are Julie reading from the Angus County Press of the 20th of November, then Gwen reading from the paper of the 27th of November, and finally Fiona with selections from the edition of the 4th of December. At the end, there is the first of a series of articles about stages in the life of a guide dog called Buster. We hope to include more articles about Buster's life in later editions next year. I find these interesting as I used to foster guide dogs until this time last year when I had to give up for health reasons and really miss having them around. Those of you who get the recording on USB stick will find an additional article on what Christmas was like for people in Britain during the Second World War. I hope you enjoy these articles and the rest of the news, and above all, I hope you enjoy the festive season. Stacey will be back in the new year with the January edition of the New Sound, and until then, I hope you have a good Christmas, and all of us here at Angus Talking Newspapers wish you good health and happiness over the festive period and throughout 2006.
Hello, this is Julie reading from the Angus County Press from Thursday, November 20th. Blow dealt to pylon project by Liam Rutherford. Angus councillors have opposed a controversial multi-million pound super pylon project, calling it a colossal act of vandalism. The energy giant formally lodged plans for the multi-million pound overhead line scheme with the Scottish Government in September. If approved, it would see a line of 180 feet tall pylons erected along a 70-mile corridor between Angus and Aberdeenshire. However, some could be as high as 246 feet. SSEN say the scheme is a key component of its wider £22 billion pathway to 2030 investment programme. The Scottish Government will decide on the application. Statutory consultees such as councils were given 2 months to give their response to the application, and in a report which went before councillors on Monday, local authority planning chiefs had recommended the proposal should on balance not be opposed. During Monday's meeting, a raft of emotionally charged deputations objecting to the proposals were heard in the council chamber. Among those calling for councillors to back them in opposing the development was Leslie Joyner. She said, "We are being asked to live not beside, but almost under the line of pylons. The proposed structures will be overwhelming and will change our landscape immeasurably." Dr. Fraser Smith, a Teeling resident and civil engineering expert, added, "This is a real clear case of the lunatics running the asylum, and they're greedy lunatics as well." However, SSEN representative Jackie Taylor said the scheme would be a catalyst for employment, business growth and clean infrastructure development. Councillor leader George Meehan subsequently lodged a motion calling on the local authority to object to the proposals, saying the scheme failed to meet the local development plan or national planning policy. SNP councillor Chris Beattie added, "I hope the public have been reassured that while we've been limited on what we were allowed to say over the last 2.5 years, we have been listening. Personally, I think that this is an act of vandalism on a colossal scale." Councillor Meehan's motion was backed unanimously by councillors. However, the rejection of the scheme could force a public inquiry. A spokesperson for SSEN said, "We are very disappointed by this decision, which goes against the recommendation of the council's own chief planning officer and decisions of all other statutory stakeholder responses to date, not to object. The project has been developed in line with all relevant policies and legislation, balancing key community and environmental considerations with technical and economic factors. It will help reduce reliance on imported energy from overseas, remove grid bottlenecks and strengthen energy security at a time when security and affordability matter most. The spokesperson added, beyond energy, this project supports Scottish jobs and businesses, drives economic growth and leaves a lasting legacy for communities through new housing and dedicated funding. Winter payments. Financial support to help pensioners heat their homes this winter has started to roll out across the country. Pension Age Winter Heating Payment will provide support to at least 880,000 pensioners to help with heating bills. The first payments have now been processed and have started to land in accounts. Payments will continue to be made throughout the winter. Eligible people of state pension age will get a payment between £101.70 and £305.10, depending on their circumstances. Most people will receive their payment automatically, no action is needed. Everyone who is eligible will receive a letter with details of their payment. For pensioners with a taxable income of over £35,000, the payment will be taken back through the tax system during 26-27. Good Start for Pilot by Mark Dowie. A new pilot recycling scheme at Angus Council's Forfar Centre separated out hundreds of kilos of extra recyclable material from general refuse in its first 3 days. Anyone taking waste in bags or containers to the recycling centre destined for the general waste skip is being asked to open them and remove any items that could be recycled instead. Sorting stations have been set up, and while staff are on hand to support customers, the public has been asked to sort out their own waste, although the council recommends that this be done before visiting the centre. The move came after analysis of non-recyclable waste skips from recycling centres showed that 41% of items, including materials from black bags, could have been recycled. This includes clothing, textiles, small electrical appliances and items that can be collected from home recycling bins, such as food waste, paper and cans. It costs significantly more to dispose of non-recyclable waste, so recycling more will save money on disposal costs. The council has said reducing this cost allows money to be redirected to vital frontline services, such as social care and schools. Over the first 3 days of the pilot, which is supported by Zero Waste Scotland, more than 338 kgs of waste was diverted to recycling. Campsites PEG Top Awards by Mark Dowie. Two Angus campsites have won honours in this year's the annual campsites.co.uk Camping and Glamping Awards. The awards highlight the best camping, glamping and touring sites across the UK, celebrating those sites who go above and beyond for their guests. Forrester Seat Holiday Park took the overall winner for Best Adult Only Site Scotland, praised for its comfort and peaceful surroundings. The park just outside Forfar offers spacious touring pitches alongside luxury ensuite shepherd's huts, complete with king-size beds, fully equipped kitchens and smart TVs. Guests can unwind in the evenings with a refreshing drink or a delicious meal at the site's restaurant with a locally sourced menu. The site has gained an impressive 4.84 star rating on its travel listing, with 100% saying they would recommend it. Peel Farm in Glen Isla was awarded regional runner-up for Best Adult Only Site Scotland, offering luxurious and contemporary glamping pods. Each has its own ensuite, television and coffee machine. Guests can also relax in their own hot tubs while admiring panoramic rural views. Accolade for Audiologist. An NHS Tayside audiologist has been recognised with a national award at the Scotland's Health Awards 2025 ceremony in Edinburgh. Head of Audiology, Laura Turton, was joint winner of the Leader of the Year category. This award recognises outstanding leadership to drive positive change, improve services and put quality at the heart of care. Her creativity and unwavering commitment has not only transformed the audiology service in NHS Tayside, but also redefined audiology care across Scotland. The service has become a national benchmark of excellence, supporting nearly 4,000 patients monthly and with waiting times reduced from over a year to 16 weeks. Her initiatives include group fittings to enhance patient experience, open access repair clinics which allow for greater flexibility, and groundbreaking accreditation that sets new care standards. Welcome for new minister. The East and Old and Inverarity Church in Forfar has welcomed its new minister, Reverend Thomas McGregor. Mr. McGregor's induction service was held in the church and led by Perth Presbytery Associate Moderator, Reverend Brenda Elwell Sutton. A lively sermon was preached by the Reverend Adrian Van Tonder, Minister of Brechin and Farnall, with Perth Presbytery Clerk Reverend John Ferguson officiating. A congregation of more than 200 attended, including ministers, presbytery elders, local church representatives, and Mr. McGregor's family and friends. Site's Economic Importance by Mark Dowie. Shadow Scottish Secretary Andrew Bowie visited two of Tayside's biggest tourist attractions to highlight their importance to Scotland's cultural and economic future. The V&A Dundee opened in 2018 and has welcomed more than 1.7 million visitors. Mr. Bowie also toured the RRS Discovery, the legendary vessel that carried Captain Scott on his first Antarctic expedition in 1901. He said the V&A is a fantastic collaboration between governments, the private sector, individual donors and charities. It showcases the best in design and technology from Scotland and around the world. It demonstrates what can be achieved when both Scotland's governments work collaboratively with partners for everyone's benefit. The V&A Dundee has become a landmark for design innovation, driving tourism and investment in the region. RRS Discovery, meanwhile, is currently undergoing a multi-million pound revamp to preserve its legacy and enhance visitors' experiences. SWI welcome guests to meeting. Members of St Vigin's SWI held a guest evening at their last meeting. President Anne Frith welcomed members from Colliston, Inverkeeler and Lethem rurals for the evening. We were entertained by the Twa Grannies, aka Maggie and Liz, who have a wide range of songs to keep the ladies joining in. The applause was very well deserved. The competitions were for a recycled jewellery box, with Leslie Masson winning the silver salver and Anne Hamilton and Audrey Hancock coming second and third. Among the collection of favourite jewellery, first was Sylvia Tasker, second was Janice Swankey, and third was Audrey Hancock. Linda Ramsey gave a vote of thanks to everyone who had made the evening go so well. Next month, the ladies will be shown by Jane how to decorate a coaster, and the competitions are for a decorated fairy cake and a favourite tree topper. And an SWT meeting, are you interested in our adorable native red squirrels? The Angus and Dundee branch of the Scottish Wildlife Trust will host a presentation by Saving Scotland's Red Squirrels, followed by discussion and refreshments. This will be held in the upstairs hall of Meffin Museum and Art Gallery at 20 West High Street, Forfar. Calendar sales boost charities' funds. A group of Angus artists have produced a 2026 calendar of their artwork which have been sold in aid of a local charity. They are all members of an art class run by former Dundee and Angus College art teacher Jacqueline Ritchie, which meets every second Monday in the lounge of Loughlin's Bar in Arbroath. They draw and paint landscapes and portraits with guidance from Jacqueline, who produced the calendar. It proved to be extremely popular and, due to high demand, sold out quickly. However, the walls of the lounge bar at Loughlin's are adorned with the students' artwork for any visitor to enjoy. The calendar sale raised £355, which was presented to mental health charity Reach Across and accepted this week by representatives John Bow and Jim Ramsey. The next class will take place on Monday evening, December 1st. A spotlight in the role of a first responder. This month's speaker at Memis and Fern SWI was Claire McIntosh, who is a volunteer with First Responder, an organisation which operates all over Scotland. When a 999 call is made, they are second to be notified after an ambulance. Claire informed us that in their cars they have defibs, oxygen, oximeters and some carry naloxone. They are often at the scenes of incidents before the ambulances and will give basic care or possibly CPR until the ambulance arrived. Claire impressed us with her long-standing volunteering within the Kirriemuir area. SSPCA Asks Government to Make Animals Matter by Julie Curry. The Scottish SPCA has published a manifesto setting out key asks to support its mission for Scotland to become the best place in the world for an animal to call home. Animals Count, Make Them Matter calls on the next Scottish Government to commit to putting animal welfare at the heart of its priorities. The country's only all-animal welfare charity with legal powers to investigate cruelty is also urging everyone from political leaders to members of the public to play their part. Demand for the charity's services continue to rise. In the first half of 2025 alone, calls to give up pets increased by almost 20% and more than 7,400 investigations were carried out into suspected cruelty and neglect. Backed by evidence and growing public support, the charity calls for the well-being of Scotland's animals, whether domestic, farmed or wild, to be recognised as both a national priority and a shared responsibility. Nicola Strachan, SSPCA Head of Advocacy and Strategic Partnership, said every day our teams see the best and worst of how animals are treated in Scotland. We rescue, protect and care for thousands, but true protection means tackling the causes of suffering, not just the symptoms. The public is clear that animal welfare matters. Our latest Animal Kindness Index, in partnership with the RSPCA and USPCA, shows it's now the third most important issue for people in Scotland. That gives Parliament a clear mandate to act. New Tenant for Port Authority by Mark Dowie. Montrose Port has welcomed a new business, signing a lease deal recently with Dales Marine Services. A specialist in dry dock and ship repair, fabrication and conversion, the company's 2,500 square feet facility on the north side of the port will allow the delivery of a range of services for ships docked at the strategic North Sea location. Montrose Port is one of the world's largest chain and anchor ports and is a hub for Scottish offshore wind projects, acting as the operations and maintenance base for the Seagreen and Inchcape wind farms. It is also the first in Scotland to provide shore power to offshore energy supply vessels, reducing emissions and promoting sustainable maritime practices. Ewan McLean, Commercial Sales and Business Development Manager, said, "We are pleased to expand our operations into Montrose Port, which has become an increasingly important hub for Scotland's offshore energy sector. The new facility will strengthen our ability to provide agile, high-quality services in a location that aligns with our long-term strategy for sustainable maritime operations. The new premises are expected to be fully operational later this year. Projects carried out at the site will focus on smaller-scale fabrication and pipework assemblies, as well as engineering and mechanical repair works. Larger and more complex projects will continue to be delivered at Dales Marine Services established facilities at the Port of Aberdeen and the Imperial Dry Dock in Leith. Time to Remember events. A Time to Remember drop-in event is being held for friends and family whose loved ones have passed away at Roxburgh House in Dundee. The event has been held on Thursday, December 4th, and Wednesday, December 10th, from 2:30 to 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the sanctuary. Roxburgh House is a purpose-built specialist palliative care unit staffed by a dedicated team. Family and friends can visit during the relaxed and informal occasion and write their own message in memory of their loved ones to place on the centre's remembrance tree. The Family Bereavement and Support Services team and chaplain will be there to meet visitors. Places are restricted. For more information and to book a place, contact Susan McGregor, Family and Bereavement Support Coordinator, on 01382 423 158 or leave a message detailing how many people and which session you wish to attend. Call for New Fund to Maintain Paths by Mark Dowie. People in Angus are being encouraged to walk more as a national charity calls for urgent funding to invest in safe local path networks. A new national survey from charity Walking Scotland has found that while 57% of Scots now walk or wheel every day, almost 6 in 10 say they would walk more if local routes were safer and better maintained. As Scotland's only government-supported community path ends in 2026, Walking Scotland is calling for a new national path fund to make walking an easier and safer choice for everyone. The figures also show that 1 in 20 admit to never walking, despite over half of survey participants saying they would like to walk more for leisure, 68%, and routine reasons, 63%. Across Scotland, people report poor pavement quality, safety concerns and poor access to local amenities are preventing them from doing so, showing a disconnect between ambition and reality. Kevin Lafferty, Walking Scotland Chief Executive, said politicians need to listen more to what the public wants. He said Scots want to walk more and many are, but these figures show too many people still face barriers that stop them. It's time to make walking the easy choice for everyone. This is a moment to listen to what communities are telling us. New app to streamline admin for farmers by Mark Dowie. An app built by two Angus cousins is set to consign a huge part of the farm office administrative burden to the waste paper basket. Farmers John and James Fairley have developed Yokit, a mobile and desktop platform which replaces handwritten timesheets, holiday forms and vital invoicing information with one simple system that the whole team can access. Operators log jobs as they go in order for managers to see live costs and generate invoices for work completed. The data feeds into detailed reports which can be created to assess fuel efficiency, equipment hours and labour costs, providing an up-to-the-minute picture of a farm's performance. Integration with the most common accounting software used on farms allow invoices to customers to be generated in seconds. John said farming has adopted all kinds of advanced precision technology to grow the best possible crop and rear the best animal, but so many farm offices are being run with pens, paper and guesswork. Yokit pulls all that together in one secure place. Every job entered builds a live picture of what's happening across the business. You can see where time and money are going and you can make decisions based on facts rather than your gut or your memory. The app was born from the pair's own frustrations with running family farms in the county. New defibrillator sites for Village by Mark Dowie. The community in and around Teeling is now better equipped to deal with emergencies thanks to the installation of three new defibrillators in the village. New equipment has been located at Teeling Village Hall in Inveraldy, Halley's Garage and Teeling Primary School. It is the culmination of a project coordinated by Teeling Community Council. Funding for the defibrillator at Teeling Village Hall was provided by the Teeling Development Trust, while further funds were released by the Community Council from the Sea Green Microgrant Fund for the other two, with the organisation committing to the continuing maintenance of the machines. Steve McSwiggan, Teeling Community Council spokesperson, said, "We are keen to make sure the defibrillators were in accessible locations with a constant electricity supply to make sure the storage boxes remain lit, visible, and stay charged for use. More staff to deal with pressured services by Mark Dowie. The Scottish Ambulance Service has boosted its staffing by bringing in almost 100 new recruits ahead of winter. The extra staff were announced recently by Neil Gray, Cabinet Secretary for Health and Social Care, while visiting the service's East Ambulance Control Centre in South Queensferry. The new staff include 25 call handlers based in the service's ambulance control centres and 22 staff, including GPs, clinical advisers and advanced practitioners who have joined the service's integrated clinical hub. A dozen scheduled care coordinators who manage the service's patient transport vehicles have also been recruited, along with 36 ambulance care assistants who will transport patients to planned hospital or clinic appointments. An additional 72 ambulance care assistants will join SAS by April 2026. Michael Dixon, Chief Executive of the SAS, said that the increase in staff is crucial to making sure the service can deal with the increased demands made of it. He said, compared to last year, we're already seeing an increase of pressure on our services. It's therefore essential that we continue to bolster our workforce to ensure we can give the best possible service to our patients and also provide support to our existing staff during this demanding time. To help our staff over winter, we'd like to remind the public that if you need urgent care but it's not life-threatening, you can call NHS 24 on 111 day or night, or visit your GP during opening hours. And we're now on to sport. So, goal of the season contender in Forfar's first away victory. Forfar's winless run came to an end with a commanding 4-0 win away to Stirling Albion on Saturday. A goal from Stuart Morrison and Scott Shepherd penalty had the Loons ahead at the break before Martin Rennie and man of the match Mark Watley made sure of the club's first away league win of the season. It was a scrappy first half that the Loons had edged, but Stirling came out from the break and looked to reduce the deficit, and almost did so 3 minutes in when Adam Brown hit the base of the post. Forfar were looked to make it two wins out of two this weekend when they travel to take on Dumbarton. Point on the road ends Moe's losing run. Montrose brought a run of five league defeats to an end when a late goal rescued a deserved point at Peterhead on Saturday. The Gable Endies competed well throughout the match but looked to be heading to another defeat when Kieran Shanks netted a penalty for the home side with just 10 minutes remaining. However, Andrew Steeves netted an equaliser with just a couple of minutes remaining. Brace for Sweeney as patience pays off by Paul McCabe. Brechin City kept up the pressure on league leaders Formartin United with a 3-1 win over Turriff United on Saturday. After a goalless first half, Grady McGrath opened the scoring before Kieran Sweeney weighed in with a double to give City a commanding lead. Turriff's Miller Keir grabbed a late consolation goal. Brechin boss Ray McKinnon told Hedge TV that Turriff initially proved a tough nut to crack. They made it difficult for us, he said. They got a lot of bodies behind the ball, but didn't leave a lot of space to play, and it was tough to break them down. So we had a good chat at half-time about how to do it, because we'd got into some good areas in that first half, had made some good runs in behind their back line, and probably had two or three good chances in the game. Frustrating, but credit to them, they had a lot of bodies behind the ball. But in the second half, the early goal helped us, and I think we created numerous chances. A late goal so tough on Red Lichties by Paul McCabe. Arbroath co-manager David Gold said losing a late goal to Ayr United was a sickener. The Red Lichties were on the verge of leaving Somerset Park with all 3 points courtesy of a first half Finlay Marshall goal when Kevin Holt struck for the home side with just 3 minutes left. Despite the setback, Gold told the club's YouTube channel that he was pleased with the overall performance. There were loads of positives in there, he said. A point away from home to Ayr United is usually a good point. We can't get away from that, but at the same time, we had chances there to win the game.
Oh, it's a dreich, damp, foggy morning as I sit down to read for you today. Calmer now after last night's howling winds and lashing rain, though. I'm Gwen, reading from Angus County Press, dated 27th November. Pete Wynne for Business by Mark Dowie. An Angus agritourism business has been crowned the best in Scotland for the second consecutive year at one of the country's top tourism awards. Newton Farm Holidays and Tours near Forfar was named Best Outdoor or Adventure Experience, sponsored by Get Your Guide, at the Scottish Thistle Awards National Final held at the Hilton, Glasgow. This marks a repeat victory for the family-run business, which also claimed the same regional title in 2024. After triumphing at the Central and East Regional Thistle Awards final earlier this year, the farm competed against other regional finalists for a coveted national trophy, earning recognition across the country for its excellence in Scotland's tourism industry. Newton Farm Holidays and Tours is a working family farm at Inverarity, offering inclusive hands-on outdoor adventure for all ages and abilities. Hosts Graham, Scott and Louise Nicol bring their farm to life, connecting visitors with animals, nature and the real story behind their food. The Best Outdoor or Adventure Experience Award, sponsored by Get Your Guide, celebrates businesses that provide unforgettable quality and authentic experiences while engaging with the landscape and communities in a positive and sustainable way. The judges were particularly impressed with the business's authentic and inclusive experiences it offers, which includes additional support needs, friendly tours, and the use of sensory and mobility aids. Approval for housing on former school site. A £7 million redevelopment of the former St Thomas RC primary school site in Arbroath has been approved, writes Liam Rutherford. Angus Council lodged a planning application earlier this year seeking to build 35 homes on vacant land at Seaton Road. The new development will consist of 21 bedroom flats and 8 3 bedroom terrace houses. 2 further 2 bedroom terrace houses are also planned, along with 4 wheelchair accessible cottages. 1 4-bed cottage will also be built. St Thomas RC Primary School closed 5 years ago when a new school opened within Abbey View. The old building has since been demolished. The proposals went before councillors at a recent Development Standards Committee meeting. The local authority's planning department received 4 letters of representation in relation to the application. 3 of these submissions objected to the development and 1 was neutral. A primary concern raised by objectors was regarding traffic, parking and road safety. The maintenance of open space and privacy was also raised. Speaking during the meeting, objector Neil Thompson said the flats would overlook the gardens and the ground floors of Gowan Place, resulting in a lack of privacy for local residents. However, despite these concerns raised, the committee members unanimously approved the application. Ops Depot opens. One of SSEN Transmission's key contractors for the delivery of its electricity transmission infrastructure investment programme has opened a new operation depot in Kirriemuir, supporting up to 70 local jobs. The new facility in Logie Industrial Park is being leased by Balfour Beatty in partnership with local small business Delson Contracts Limited. Operations have commenced at the depot and pending final planning determinations linked to SSEN Transmission's proposed projects, it is expected to remain in operation until at least 2031. Currently spanning 2.5 acres, the facility will expand to a 16-acre site as activity increases, offering essential office space, storage and lay-down areas for materials used across SSEN Transmission's projects. This will help ensure efficient delivery of infrastructure critical to connecting renewable energy and supporting Scotland's net zero ambitions. The depot forms part of the wider infrastructure and supply chain expansion under SSEN Transmission's major investment programme, which the company says is designed to unlock renewable energy potential, strengthen the transmission network, and help deliver an energy-secure and clean power Scotland and the UK. Council rent survey open. Council tenants are being asked to take part in the local authority's annual rent consultation to help shape future rent levels and housing investment. Like other areas in Scotland, Angus faces increasing pressure on housing services, including rising demand for affordable homes and growing costs to maintain and improve existing properties. Long-term financial modelling shows a significant funding shortfall over the next 30 years. Without sufficient rent income, Angus Council would be unable to continue investing in homes to the standard required. This would affect essential upgrades, such as new kitchens and bathrooms, window and door replacements, and improvements to make homes warmer and more energy efficient. Tenants are being asked to consider rent options of 8%, 8.25%, or 8.5%. The consultation will run until Friday, December 19. Details are available at the website engage.angus.gov.uk/tenant-participation/surveys/rent-survey1. Warning to be aware of online scammers by Mark Dowie. Scots are losing more than £2,500 a day to online scammers, experts have warned. Advice Direct Scotland, which operates the national service consumeradvice.scot, is urging shoppers to stay vigilant as they hunt for bargains. New figures show that Scots suffered almost £1 million in financial losses last year after falling victim to online scams. During 2024, it recorded a total of 1,031 cases, resulting in combined financial losses of £946,126, equivalent to £2,592 being lost to online scams every day. As the figures only relate to cases that were reported, the true scale of losses is likely to be significantly higher. Scammers often use the events to exploit shoppers, especially during timed sales, pressuring victims into parting with money, bank details, or personal information. Advice Direct Scotland's experts warn that fraudsters are increasingly using new tactics to target online shoppers seeking bargains in the pre-Christmas sales. AI is making emails and images more convincing, so it's now harder to spot scams. Shoppers need to check who they're buying from to ensure their purchases are safe and worth the money. Free advice is available by calling 0808 164 6000 or at www.consumeradvice.scot. Talk on travels across India. Four for Probus members were delighted to welcome to their meeting retired GP Guy Woodruff in suitable costume with a beautifully illustrated tour of northern India in 2024. This was a return trip to the country for Guy and wife Sue, having been there 40 years ago as young doctors. They went this time in a small group with Intrepid Travel using basic accommodation and transport train, bus and tuk-tuk, with a very knowledgeable guide. Guy showed amazing photos of palaces, mosques, forts, deserts, rivers, monkeys, camels and locals with their festivals, rituals and food. They travelled from New Delhi through Agra for the Taj Mahal, the Raj Desert, Jaipur, Baikonur, Jaisalmer, Thor, Jodhpur, Varanasi and Benares, covering over 1,000 miles of the subcontinent. Members found Guy's presentation fascinating and informative. And there's a lovely picture with George Mitchell, who proposed the vote of thanks, and President Ian Stewart. Guy is in the picture with his beautifully patterned, decorated waistcoat or gilet, which is looking very attractive. Site visit to factory. A decision on plans to transform a historic Angus Town factory into a yoga studio and hair salon has been deferred amid traffic and parking fears, writes Liam Rutherford. Fraser Commercial Group Limited is seeking planning permission for a development to transform the Montrose Rope Works. The C-listed building, known locally as the Ropey, was previously home to the Montrose Men's Shed. This is the last big step for the development, as plans for the site were first revealed in late 2024. Those included a bakery and cafe in a development the applicant said could create 20 new jobs. However, the plans were later withdrawn after a wave of local opposition and a scaled-back version of the proposals was submitted. The latest bid went before councillors at a recent Development Standards Committee meeting. The proposals attracted 13 letters of representation, 6 objecting and 7 in support. Concerns include road traffic and pedestrian safety, privacy impacts and inadequate parking. Speaking during the meeting, objector Shirley Cheen said, "If the application goes ahead, it's just an accident waiting to happen. Surely health and safety comes before the planning. There's going to be an accident, someone is going to get run over, or there's going to be vehicles crashing. It's a blind entrance, you can't see coming out, so I just don't think it should go ahead." Following these pleas, councillors put a decision on hold so that a site visit could be carried out. SNP councillor Kenny Brays said, "We need to have a clear understanding of what is required of the traffic plan and how customers are to behave." Committee convener David Cheap added, "I don't have an issue with the actual use that's being proposed here, but I do have issue with the generality of access and the ability to use it." The application will be brought back before councillors at a later date. You can search for full documents for public notices via Public Notice Portal, publicnoticeportal.uk, or Angus Council's website. Uganda Charity. At Forfar East Old and Inverarity Guild's recent meeting, Anne-Marie Pitt from Ruthven presented on the charity Friends of Tuwa. Set up in 2021 to support the students of Tuwa Primary School in Uganda and the well-being of the community as a whole, its aims are the prevention or relief of poverty, improvement to health and the advancement of education. Anne-Marie, charity treasurer, raises much-needed funds as sponsorship for the more than 600 children and visits Tuwa with her skilled carpenter husband Bill every 2 years. Her video and slides were very moving and inspired members to ask many questions before she was presented with a cheque by Treasurer Anne. A colourful picture here with baby jumpers knitted and donated by members. Left to right in the picture are Esther, Anne-Marie and Anne. Chef graduates with Top Award by Mark Dowie. A Carnoustie chef has marked the end of his studies by winning one of the top prizes at City of Glasgow College. John Hurst was awarded the Principal's Prize for Outstanding Academic Achievement as he graduated from his SVQ in Professional Cookery Level 6, along with a £100 prize on Monday. The award reflects his skill and determination, marking the culmination of an apprenticeship and study programme that has prepared him for his future career. Josh said, "This recognition means so much to me because it reflects a journey that has been challenging, inspiring, and genuinely life-changing. My 2-year apprenticeship at the Torridon in the Highlands shaped me in ways I never expected. I had the privilege of working alongside truly exceptional people who encouraged me, believed in me, and pushed me to become the best version of myself. I'm especially grateful to my head chef, Danny Young, whose leadership, high standards and constant support played a huge role in my development. Josh added, "This journey has shown me that with passion, resilience and the right people around you, you really can achieve anything you set your mind to." Receiving this award is not just a celebration of my work, it's a reminder of how far I've come and how far I can go. Josh is encouraging others to pursue education or apprenticeships, saying, "It's not always easy, but the growth opportunities and sense of achievement are incredibly rewarding." Marine's donation to Dementia Centre. The Arbroath Connections Dementia Meeting Centre is the latest Angus organisation to receive support from the East of Scotland Royal Marines Association. The Arbroath-based group regularly organises charity events, raising funds which they donate on to worthwhile charities. Former serving Royal Marines from the branch visited the centre in Russell Square. The centre is open Monday, Tuesday and Thursday and allows those living with dementia to get together for a cup of tea, group chat and a chance to enjoy each other's company. Activities include games such as dominoes, putting on a sing-along to various musicians who regularly pop in to perform. The same day, Gordon Reed from Forfar popped in to play his accordion. During the visit, branch chairman Dave Barton handed over a £200 donation to centre manager Abby Craig. Advice available during cold snap. As Scotland faces a sharp drop in temperatures, National Children's Charity, Children First, is encouraging Angus families who are struggling with the cost of living and keeping warm this winter to seek help. The charity is warning that they hear every day from parents and carers who are struggling to make ends meet and provide basic essentials for their children. Children First's support line offers practical, emotional and financial help to families across Scotland 365 days a year. The team has seen the number of callers rise by close to 50% so far this year. They can help with benefit checks, budgeting advice and accessing emergency support to ensure families stay warm and well this winter. Parents and carers can contact the support line via web chat at www.children-first.org.uk/supportline or call free on 0800-282233. The service is available 7 days a week. And lastly today from me, "Open Pubs Later for World Cup" by Brian Yule. The Scottish Government has been urged to give pubs special late-night licences after Scotland qualified for the World Cup. With next year's tournament taking place in North America, it could mean that some of the games are being shown back home in the middle of the night. The idea for late licences has been put forward by Scottish Liberal Democrat leader Alex Cole-Hamilton. He said, "After a tough few years for pubs and clubs, what an opportunity this is for the government to work with them to make the most of this amazing achievement. If Scotland are kicking off at 2 a.m, some will watch it at home in their jammies. But I think there are lots of people who would like to watch this with their friends in a pub or a community venue. It's up to the Scottish government to seize the moment. A well-planned temporary relaxation is the common sense approach that balances enjoyment with public safety. The industry is getting behind the plans, including Scottish Licensed Trade Association Managing Director Colin Wilkinson." He said Steve Clark's side has lifted the whole country and given everyone something positive to look forward to at a time when most of the news headlines are depressing. "We urge local authorities and licensing boards across Scotland to put special measures in place to enable the nation to share in our national football team's success in reaching their first World Cup for 28 years and hope that our pubs and bars will be allowed to open and show games late at night. The best place for fans to watch these games will be in our local pubs and bars, where the atmosphere will be electric. You'll be among friends and will no doubt make new ones. After all, not everyone will be able to travel to the USA, Canada or Mexico. Amid the current doom and gloom weighing down the whole of the UK, Scotland's victory has given us all something to smile about. For our pubs and bars struggling with the ongoing cost of living crisis and cost of doing business, to be able to open for a few extra hours during the World Cup will bring a massive boost to many businesses, particularly the small independent operators.
Hello, Fiona here, reading from Angus County Press, dated Thursday, December the 4th, 2025. Warning over police service. The Police Services Union has warned that the closure of police stations across Scotland, including in Angus, is eroding community policing and neighbourhood safety. The caution came after it emerged that 180 buildings have been lost since the creation of the single force. 12 stations have been relinquished this year, with a further 21 closures or sales in progress. Across Tayside Division, provision has changed in 14 areas, and in Angus, with the loss of stations in Freecombe, Muirhead, Lethem, Broughty Ferry and Monifieth, Forfar Station on West High Street closed last year, with facilities now moved to new premises at William Waller's House at Orchard Bank, Forfar. The Scottish Police Federation has said it is deeply concerned by the number of properties lost since 2013, while opposition MSPs have accused the Scottish Government of hollowing out and presiding over the death of community policing. Police Scotland said its estate's transformation should not be seen as a withdrawal from communities, but a reflection of modern policing in ways that are more effective and sustainable. And the Scottish Government said it is supporting Police Scotland's estate plan by investing £1.64 billion in policing this year, including £70 million of capital funding. David Kennedy, Scottish Police Force General Secretary, said, "The Scottish Police Federation remains deeply concerned that the ongoing sale of police stations is eroding the visible presence of policing in our communities." Funds for Dreams. A Kirriemuir family is urging people across the county to get behind a Christmas giving campaign and support the charity that granted their daughter a magical wish following years of treatment for a brain tumour. Leah MacDonald, 15, and mum Elaine Collar are supporting this year's Big Give Christmas Challenge. Running until Tuesday, December the 9th, it will raise money on behalf of Rays of Sunshine, the charity which grants wishes to seriously ill children across the UK. The charity is close to their hearts after it granted Leah's dream wish earlier this year to experience an immersive trip into the world of Harry Potter. Leah was diagnosed initially with a brain tumour when she was just 5, and again at 11. Treatment has been long and difficult, leaving her with visual impairment and knocking her confidence. She was introduced to Rays of Sunshine by her nursing team. Leah's favourite books are the Harry Potter series, and throughout her treatment, she used the books to escape her hospital room and go on adventures. Knowing how special the story was to her, Leah's Rays of Sunshine wish granter planned the perfect experience for a Harry Potter super fan. She was flown from Edinburgh to London and welcomed to Georgian House Hotel for a stay in their Wizarding World-themed rooms. The following day brought a behind-the-scenes tour at Warner Brothers Studios, and Leah's wish was rounded off with a shopping spree in the gift shop. Elaine said, "It was so nice to be able to switch off and trust the rays of sunshine had planned everything. We didn't need to worry. Every detail was so special." During the big GIF, all donations are doubled, meaning supporters' generosity will have twice the impact. Amy Chambers, Rays of Sunshine CEO, said, "The demand for wishes is higher than ever, and every donation will help us brighten the lives of seriously ill children this Christmas and beyond. We hope Leah's story inspires people across Angus to support the campaign and have their donations doubled. To support the campaign, go to raysofsunshine, all one word, raysofsunshine.org.uk/big-give. Rugby Duo back new support centre. A new facility offering mental health and emotional support has been opened officially in Arbroath. The ribbon at the Beacon was cut by Scottish rugby players Matt and Xander Fagerson in an opening ceremony during Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. The centre aims to break down barriers and encourage men to start conversations about their health and seek support when needed. Matt and Xander highlighted the importance of accessing support and how having someone to listen to can make all the difference. The brothers spoke about how mental health does not discriminate and no one is immune to mental health struggles, but with proper guidance, support, and open conversations, you can begin to meet these challenges head on. Matt said, "Open communication and support are essential in our daily routines, but especially in sport. It's vital to remember that mental health is not a weakness, but something that should be at the forefront of our daily habits. Sport plays a powerful role in this. Its communities stand by us through both winning and losing, encourage honesty, connection, and resilience. By fostering supportive environments in all scenarios, sport helps break down stigma and reminds us that no one has to face challenges alone." Arbroath gets into the Christmas spirit. Arbroath celebrated the start to the Christmas build-up with two events over the weekend. On Friday, the town's Christmas lights were switched on at an event in Kirk Square, with Santa Claus putting in an appearance, assisted by local man Derek Lorimer. The tree lights were switched on by Erin Swankey, who will play Alice in the forthcoming production of Alice in Wonderland at the Abbey Theatre. On Saturday, the Friends of Arbroath Abbey organised a torch parade from the Signal Tower Museum to Arbroath Abbey. On the way, they stopped at the harbour, the charity creel tree made with lobster pots by Harbour Assistant Grant Mill. Harbour Master Bruce Fleming fired the crowd up and announced the arrival of Santa to switch on the tree lights. The event followed a market held in the Abbey grounds during the day. Brecon's festive season gets off to a lively start. Singing star Susan Boyle got Brecon's festive season off to a successful start on Saturday when she switched on the town's Christmas lights. Susan's switch-on was the culmination of an afternoon of activities focused on St Ninian's Square. The sizeable crowd was entertained throughout by resident DJ Tam Smith, with performances from members of the First Brecon Scout Group and Notorious Dance. They also had the opportunity to browse a variety of stalls in Gardner Memorial Church, where Santa was ready to receive visitors to his grotto. After wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, Susan added that she looked forward to returning to Brecon next August, next year, 2026, where she will sing at the Summer End Festival. Meanwhile, families flocked to the Caledonian Railway over the weekend to board the Polar Express. Those families lucky enough to have a golden ticket all gathered in their pyjamas to board the train. The magical journey took them from Brecon Station to Bridge of Dun and back again, with a vintage diesel locomotive pulling one way and Thomas, the tank engine, obliging on the return trip. The experience provided great seasonal family fun on a grand day out for children and adults alike. There was also plenty of toy memorabilia available to purchase at Brecon Station Cafe. The Polar Express will now run every weekend up until Christmas. And there's a picture of Susan Boyle in a lovely white coat with beautiful blonde hair and giving the thumbs up sign. Takeaway, living up to its name. An Arbroath takeaway has been shortlisted as a finalist in the 14th British Kebab Awards. Founded in 2013 by restaurateur and community campaigner Ibrahim Dogas, the awards celebrate the very best kebab restaurants and takeaways across the United Kingdom. And Best Kebab and Pizza House on Kepti Street has made it to the final 11 in the Best Kebab House in Scotland category. The awards have become a highlight of the UK hospitality calendar, recognising excellence across 20 categories. Scouts ready for Christmas post. Arbroath Scouts are again offering their Christmas postal service in the local area at a very competitive rate. The cost this year is 40 pence per card, and collection boxes are available now at the following locations: Andy Stewart Court, Arbroath Library, Ashbrook Nursery, Brown's Pet Store, Cafe Barista, High Street Co-op, Mayfield, Golden Lion Garage, Kepti Newsagents, Marlin's Hairdressers, Morrison's Superstore, Morrison's Local, Kirkton Nisa, Timmergreen's Shop and Save, Brecon Road, Specsavers, Abbeygate Centre, St Andrew's Church, Tesco's Wardikes PS, West Kirk Church, Ponderlaw Scout Hall, Ponderlaw Lane, Kepti Scout Centre and Kepti Road. So, a huge collection to choose from. Roaring start for new Aldi. Scottish curling star Vicky Wright recently cut the ribbon to officially open Aldi's new store in Arbroath. The new 18,500 square foot store opened at Dundee Road Retail Park at 8 a.m. on Thursday and welcomed a steady stream of customers who had braved the bad weather to queue up in advance. Olympic gold medalist Vicky was assisted by pupils from Muirfield Primary while Aldi staff looked on, and the first 30 customers through the doors received a goodie bag of fruit and veg. The store includes a food-to-go section and will provide weekly offers on Scottish products. Aldi is the only UK supermarket with a dedicated Scottish buying department, allowing it to tap into a vibrant agricultural and manufacturing base. It will be open Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. and 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. on a Sunday. Help with energy bills. A national charity is warning that Scottish households will have no respite from high energy bills over the winter after Ofgem announced that the energy price cap will rise slightly in January. Advice Direct Scotland, which runs the National Energy Advice Service, energyadvice.scot, said thousands of people are facing stubbornly high household bills. Energy regulator Ofgem announced today, Friday, that the cap on what suppliers can charge will rise from £1,755 to £1,758 on January the 1st. This is a 0.2% increase on the current level and will see the average bills rise by £3 per year. Current forecasts suggest the price cap will rise again in April. The new price cap is £620 more than the amount that households were being charged before the energy crisis hit in the autumn of 2021, an increase of 54%. Advice Direct Scotland is urging anyone worried about energy-related debt to contact its team of experts who can provide free, impartial and practical advice. It is also urging all households to review how much they are paying and check whether there are better tariffs available. Help is available by visiting www.energyadvice.scot or calling 0808 196 8660. That's 0808 196 8660. Scotland End-to-End Walk. Arbroath Probus Club members enjoyed a talk full of adventure at their recent meeting. Former chairman Bruce Curry described his 30-day, 470-mile hike from Kirk Yetham in the Borders to Cape Roth, the length of Scotland. The route, known as the End-to-End, was 90% off-road and went through some spectacular scenery. This showed Scotland at its best. The Scottish National Trail. The route combines sections of other well-known long-distance walking routes, including St. Cuthbert's Way, the Southern Upland Way, the Forth and Clyde Canal Pathway, the West Highland Way, the Rob Roy Way, and the Cape Roth Trail. Created by walker Cameron McNeish, it is the first walking route to run the length of Scotland. Sandy has signed up for a full season stateside. Forfa driver Sandy Mitchell will contest the 2026 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship in America. The 25-year-old Lamborghini Factory Drive will reunite with top Canadian team Pfaff Motorsport for the full GTD Pro campaign. Mitchell raced with Pfaff Motorsport at Watkins Glen in New York earlier this year in a one-off appearance in IMSA. This will mark his first All-American Championships since 2019, when the 10-race series starts at Daytona on January 24th to the 25th. Mitchell said, "It's fantastic to be back facing a full season in the States, to be returning to the drive with Pfaff Motorsport and contest the full IMSA season. It's super exciting." Mitchell will partner fellow Lamborghini factory driver Andrea Caldarelli across the campaign. For the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona, Mitchell and Caldarelli will be joined by James Hinchcliffe and Lamborghini factory driver Mirko Bortolotti. Then for the 12 Hours of Sebring and Motul Petit Le Mans, Mitchell and Caldarelli will welcome additional support from Frank Pereira, completing a full factory driver lineup for these two endurance events. Good luck to them. Cup defeat was not a true reflection of the match. Forfar Athletic lost 2-0 at home to Partick Thistle in the third round of the Scottish Cup. However, Athletic boss Jim Weir didn't feel the result was a true reflection of the game. Thistle took the lead in the 20th minute with a huge amount of good fortune as Cammy Logan's wayward cross came back of the post and fell perfectly for Ben Stanway. Kyle Turner then came close to a second as he clipped the top of the bar with a volley. Then Neil Stafford kept out a point-blank header from Alex Samuel. Forfar looked the better side after the break, but lacked any real cutting edge. And Thistle sealed it in injury time as Logan found an unmarked Samuel to score from 6 yards out. Weir told the club's media team, "We were playing an absolutely brilliant championship side who are on a great run, so we knew it was going to be a difficult game. I thought we started okay. Then Partick get the wee break at the goal and they certainly were on top in the first half. Second half, there wasn't much between the two teams, although I felt we were slightly on the front foot. It was a sore one to take with the goal so late on, but I didn't really think the score reflected the second half performance. Obviously, it's disappointing to be out of the cup, but I can't fault my players as they were terrific." Forfar host East Kilbride on Saturday in League Two, then Edinburgh City on Tuesday in the KDM Evolution Trophy. Montrose rub shoulders with the game's elite. Thanks to Montrose women being promoted to the top league in Scotland, the club has been a member of European football clubs for the past 2 years. The organisation represents top-tier clubs all over Europe and membership now exceeds 800 clubs. The EFC provides a long list of services to members, including educational visits to other member clubs and a legal advice helpline. Crucially, for Montrose women, it also lobbies UEFA in relation to the solidarity payments for top-tier clubs not in European competition. The EFC hosts many top-class events during the season, including Club Connect, which now has a dedicated women's focus group. It also runs a series of academy visits to some high-profile clubs like Atletico Madrid, Brighton and PSG. Montrose Academy lead David Burns visited Madrid and Brighton last season, and this season's list of events looks equally impressive. Well, folks, all that's left for me to say is wishing you a very happy festive season and speak to you again in 2026. That's me, Fiona, signing off.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And now our totally new item, Dog School, featuring Charlotte the trainer and Buster the doggy apprentice.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, and I'm here with the first update on my most recent recruit into guide dog training, Buster. Buster is a yellow Labrador. He is 1 year and 6 months old. He has had a slightly delayed entry to training due to a tail injury that he sustained during puppy raising, which took a long time to heal. Buster arrived 2 weeks ago, and since then we have been spending our time getting him settled with his foster family, working on building a bond, and doing some straightforward training to ease him into his new routine. Buster has settled really well with his fosterers, who also have two cats. Living with cats is a new experience for Buster, but I chose this family for him because Buster leans more towards sensitivity than being boisterous, and I suspected he would fit in well with the cats, who are young and playful, and not afraid to tell him off. He was very interested in the cats to begin with, but he is now able to settle around them, which is great. It's really beneficial for our dogs to have spent time around cats, as lots of people on our waiting list have cats. Most of our dogs will adapt to a household with cats, but if they are already relaxed around them, it means that more time can be dedicated to other aspects of client training when a dog is matched. There have been a few issues that I've needed to work on with Buster. Firstly, he's a bit of a scavenger in the home. Unfortunately, he is quite intelligent and worked out how to open the kitchen door to get the cat's food, so we have needed to block this off. He has also needed a trip to the vets as he ate a sock out of the fosterer's shoe. These are issues that need to be prevented through management while I work on behaviours like drop, which can be used as a backup. Buster does have a history of eating non-food items. At puppy raising, he ate a hanky, which needed to be surgically removed, so it is a known behaviour for him. Buster is also quite underconfident around other dogs. At the moment, he's getting exercise in a hired field on the weekends with his fosterers while I work on building his confidence during the week. Thankfully, this has really improved, and this week I will be showing the fosterers how to free run Buster in their local park. Day to day, Buster and I have been going out and doing lead walks in quiet residential areas, and I have been gently introducing behaviours like stopping at the kerb, pausing for narrow gaps, and moving around obstacles with plenty of room. And Buster has picked all of these up really well and has lovely lead behaviour. He walks nicely without much pulling and isn't too distracted by people, interesting smells, litter, or anything else that we have come across. He also hasn't been fazed by noises from builders, traffic, car alarms and similar, so I feel that soon he will be able to do his first walks in harness. These first few weeks are predominantly about assessing the dog, getting a feel for their personality and their strengths and weaknesses so the training can be adjusted accordingly. Aside from the scavenging and slight underconfidence, Buster is doing well and I don't have any concerns about his progress so far. He's taken really well to travelling in the van, and next week I will likely take him on a quiet train, and if this goes well, we can progress to the bus. That's all for now. I will continue with another update on Buster in a few weeks' time.
TNF Soundings.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Colin. During the 6 long years of the Second World War, Christmas was a much-needed chance to celebrate and forget the ordeals of the conflict. But it was also a sad time for millions of people, with so many families separated by evacuation and military service. War broke out in September 1939, and that Christmas was a relatively normal one. There was no rationing, yet. But people knew that shortages were officially due to begin the following January, and many were determined to enjoy themselves while they still could. However, the war still loomed over the festive season. The best-selling toys that Christmas had, unsurprisingly, a military theme, with adults giving each other fancy decorated gas mask cases and steel helmets, as well as the usual seasonal gifts. The Christmas edition of Women's Weekly magazine got in on the act too, suggesting that the inside of blackout blinds could be decorated for the festive season. That must have been a challenge. By Christmas 1940, the shortages were already biting, which made small artificial trees very popular, as they could be taken into air raid shelters to give those gloomy places a touch of festive cheer during some of the heaviest bombing. Good Housekeeping magazine even suggested a recipe for a Christmas cake in the shape of an Anderson shelter. A novel idea. The most popular gift that year appears to have been soap, which ended up being a real luxury at various times during the war. The following year saw a festive season of good news and bad. America had finally entered the war after the attack on Pearl Harbor Naval Base in early December 1941, which meant Britain was no longer standing alone. But the British Crown Colony of Hong Kong surrendered to the Japanese on Christmas Day, an event that became known as Black Christmas. However, in classic British fashion, it was determined that the show must go on. In the Ministry of Information propaganda film, Christmas Under Fire, it was emphatically stated that the nation has made a resolve that war or no war, the children of England will not be cheated out of the one day they look forward to all year. So, as far as possible, this will be an old-fashioned Christmas, at least for the children. Christmas 1942 saw shortages of most seasonal goods, including alcohol, which was difficult to get unless you were friends with the landlord at your local pub or knew someone on the black market. By this point in the war, sweets had also been rationed, much to the disappointment of children everywhere. People got creative and made their own decorations from anything they could find, or used holly, ivy, and other greenery. The Ministry of Food suggested a novel and oddly prosaic idea to make such greenery even more Christmassy. Dip your greenery in a strong solution of Epsom salts. When it dries, it will be beautifully frosted. Endless turkey sandwiches on Boxing Day were completely off the cards by Christmas 1943, as it was almost impossible to get hold of any type of festive bird, and you'd be very lucky to get a Christmas pudding at all. The News of the World reported on that year's shortages, "To make up for the shortage of shell eggs, there will be a double ration of dried eggs. Between now and Christmas, there will be an acute shortage of fruit. There are practically no apples on the market, and it's doubtful if many children will get oranges. The sale of nuts is practically non-existent." Well, I expect that cheered everybody up. Despite this, people still celebrated Christmas as best they could. Newspapers and magazines printed ideas for homemade presents, and all around the country people were busily knitting and sewing and recycling household objects into unusual toys and gifts. The last Christmas of the war was a particularly tough one on the home front, despite the end being in sight. Rationing was really biting, and by December 1944, many British cities were genuinely on the verge of running dry of alcohol. In fact, things had got so bad that arrests for drunk and disorderly, usually on the increase during the festive season, actually plummeted that year, to the relief of police officers all over Britain, presumably. Preparing the Christmas feast during a time of food rationing and booze shortages was a challenge, even for the most accomplished of cooks. The Ministry of Food, who controlled food supplies, issued a steady stream of recipes and food advice to the home front, some of which were more successful than others. To modern tastes, quite a few of their suggestions were far from appetizing, using mock or substitute ingredients. But let's face it, they had no choice, did they? Merry Christmas.
TNS Soundings.